Chapter 42, A Fancy Name for a Filthy Thing. Atlantic City hurt us all, and that included the white Challenger. While I convalesced in a hospital, the car was being made whole in a body shop. Now it's hidden in an alley behind Keene's apartment, and we are bounding up the fire escape and busting through Keene's door. As soon as we get in the room, a wind hits us, and Adam Egott points to the window, where a telephone-size hole explains everything. The couch is covered with candy bar wrappers and empty ice cream cartons and my bum of a secretary, fast asleep. Beside him is a pill bottle, tipped on its side with pills spilled everywhere. "Wake up, Keene," I say, loud and right in his ear. "Where's my book?" Adam Egott and I start ransacking the apartment in search of the book, and lucky for us, Keene has a bookcase, so that's where we start. I figure out that he's been busy writing all right. It turns out he's been doing his secretary work for a lot of guys, and we go through every last one of them. There's a book by a guy named J.D. Salinger. I think he was a middleweight back in the day, but most I've never heard of. William Faulkner, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, William S. Burroughs. There's one by Victor Hugo. I remember him. He was the bearded one who won Survivor the first year. Anyways, the point is, Keene has been busy writing for all these clowns, but we go through every single book, and mine isn't here. Mine isn't here! I get mad as hell and start yelling in Keene's ear, and finally he's awake and starts in with his "now see here, and I'll have you know," and all the rest of that splendid talk of his. "You'll be surprised to know that I have other projects, Mr. McDonald, but I understand your concern. The deadline is imminent, and I promise I will have it done." "You should have just told Hugo to wait his turn. Nobody cares about him anyway. He was from season one, wasn't he?" And I can hear my words getting louder and angrier, but the truth is I'm scared. "And let's get serious, Keene. Hell, how hard can this be? I mean, don't I phone every few days and tell you lots of stories? All you have to do is type them. Did you get my story about how I had my very own show? And then I wanted to call it the Big Boss Man? And they wanted to call it the Norm Show? And how they gave me my very own show but refused to give me a gun? Did you not get that one? I called it in 2 days ago and must have talked for an hour on your answering machine. That's got to be good for a chapter or two." "Yes, I listened to it. And frankly, I didn't understand a word of it." "Now you listen to me, old man. It's not your job to frankly understand a word of it. It's your job to type down the words you frankly don't understand and to put them in a book. We got to hand it to that grow brat over at Random House. Get our cash." "Yes, I understand how the process works." And now it's Keene whose voice takes on an angry edge. We are really starting to shout each other down now, but just when I think it's sure to come to fists, Keene stops, and a faraway look comes upon his eyes, and he smiles. "Yes. Yes, now that I think of it, you're quite right, Mr. McDonald. Why, there's no reason I shouldn't be able to finish this book within that time, what with all the fine material you've been providing me?" "Certainly, yes. There's just one thing I must insist on. One thing, and I hope it doesn't come off rude. It's just that I mustn't be disturbed, you understand. My work demands solitude. You boys look exhausted. Why don't you get yourself some sleep, and I'll get right to work. What do you say, fellows?" This turnaround by Keene gets me excited, and I lead him over to the desk where his computer sits. But then, when I look over at Adam Egott, I see the tears, so I take the smile off my face. I know the problem, of course, and approach him. "You're thinking about Sammy, aren't you?" "Yeah, I am," he says. "You know, Norm, I don't know which hurts more, the knowledge that I'll never feel her lips against mine, or the knowledge that she was a man who stole my $1.6 million video kino ticket." "For me, it would be the second one."
"Really?"
"Oh, yeah, the second one, for sure."
"You're a good friend, Norm."
"Better than you think," I say, and pull out a bottle of 150-proof iceberg rum. Go into Keene's room, drink down this bottle, and get some shut-eye. You need it, buddy.
and Adam Egget smiles at the sight of Edward McClintock's bottle and grabs it by the throat like a bad man, and the two of them retire to the bedroom. I turn my attention back to Keene, who is sitting in front of his computer but not looking at it. Instead, his gaze falls somewhere in the middle distance, where reality resides. Oh, I don't mean to be inhospitable, but you boys aren't thinking of staying here with me, are you? Sure we are, I say. Listen, what do you say I sit beside you so we can hurry this up? I'll do the talking and you do the typing, and I bet we'll be finished by the morning. It looks like my words have snapped Keene out of his trance. No need, my good man, no need at all. Now, you could do something to help, though. Yeah, sure, Keene, anything at all. The thing is, there's been quite a draft here in the parlor ever since the telephone left. I've been helping myself to your clothes. As I explained to you, I'm a method writer. But the thing is, the outfit has gotten a little gamey. Yeah, sure. Keene always did take a long time to ask a short question. I grab a Norm Show t-shirt, an SNL jacket, and a dirty work cap for my suitcase. Mr. McDonald, I can't help but notice the stitching on your SNL jacket. Oh, yeah, I say. The first shipment I bought, the damn fool wrote my name as Norm McFonald. But he gave them to me half price, and I figured maybe they'd have antique value one day. I got 10 like that, never wear them, so you help yourself to one. They're practically brand new. You'll be wearing a genuine collector's item, Keene. Well, thank you very much, Mr. McFonald. I guess that's Keene's idea of a joke. Yeah, no problem at all. There are 9 more where that came from. How's that sound? Keene smiles. It sounds splendid, he says, and then flinches. I just smile at the old man. He's not so bad. He insists he will have the book finished by the morning, but only if I leave him alone. He says I can sleep in his room, and when I look back, Keene is already hard at work, so I hit the hay and fall fast asleep, happy that when I wake up, the book will be finished, or close to it. But I wake up in the middle of the night, when nature calls. I get up and take a visit to the little boy's room, and when I walk out of Keene's bedroom, I see something I will likely never forget. There stands Keene, fully dressed in my clothes, on top of a small stepladder with a noose around his neck. He sees me, and I can see the shock register on his face. He's been caught. Still, he is determined. Mr. McDonald, might I suggest that you go back to your room? This is not something you want to see. You're damn right it's not, I say. But it's not something you want to do either, Keene. Think about it. You slip at all and lose your footing on that stepladder, and you're a dead man. Things become worse when I look across the room and see Adam Egget and his PJs looking on in confusion. You guys woke me up. Hey, what's Mr. Keene doing, Norm? I look at him in his pajamas and his innocence. It's called autoerotic asphyxiation, Adam Egget. No. What? Protests Keene. What's autoerotic asphyxiation, Norm? Well, it's a very fancy name for a very filthy thing. That's not what's going on here, says Keene. Oh, no, of course not. You were changing a light bulb, I'm sure. With a noose around your neck. Look, I'm warning you to just return to your rooms and go to sleep. If you stay, you're not going to like what you see. Duh, I say. Look, if you're hell-bent on doing this thing that only serves to make a filthy thing filthier, then fine. But it is the responsibility of my friend and me to make sure nothing goes wrong. The last thing I want is to try to explain to your friends and family in the press what we witnessed here tonight. Adam Egget, steady the ladder while he deprives himself of oxygen and lays down with himself simultaneously. Something in my book must have filled him with impure thoughts. Stop this babble, Keene blares, and then removes the noose from his neck. I've decided against it. You're making a wise decision, Keene, and I'll reward you for it. I pull a capsule of amyl nitrate from my pocket. You go now and lay beside yourself, and at the moment of sin, break this beneath your nose and inhale deeply. It'll do the trick just fine. No rope necessary. Keen throws the capsule with contempt to the floor, and it bounces once on the hardwood and vanishes beneath the couch. Immediately, Adam Egget is on his hands and knees, with his head underneath the couch, searching for the amyl nitrate, as a swine would truffles. "I suppose you're right, Mr. MacDonald," Keen hisses as I make my way to the little boy's room. "I promised Ms. Grau a manuscript, and I must honor that promise." And, as if in a trance, he trundles over to his computer and sits before it.
I've been biding my time, and now is my chance. I wake up to find MacDonald gone and the other one asleep. Mr. MacDonald has been keeping me captive for a month now. I've been here typing what he says, getting as many words down as possible. The other one has a gun trained on me at all times. They are hiding, they say, from the fat man with the artificial hair, and they might well be. This fat man with the artificial hair may well kill us all. There is a problem, though. He may not exist. I may have made him up. I can't be sure of anything anymore. In order to fill up Mr. MacDonald's memoirs, I had to stray far from the prosaic facts that made up his life, and I have veered into straight-out falsehoods. Why would these fools have barricaded themselves in my brownstone if there was not real danger outside? And what about the dolt sleeping on the couch, the one I named Adam Egget? He never existed before I constructed him on my own computer. He does not exist in the real world. He has never managed the world-famous comedy store. I know I made him up. But how is it that I could have made up a human being who now lies snoring on my Chesterfield? No, this is the truth. I am a secretary, just as Mr. MacDonald has asserted from the beginning. I know that the two live here with me and that they are on the lam. I know this is true and not something I have written. And I know what I need to find MacDonald's essence. I've known it from the start. I tie a band around my biceps, pick up a serrette, place the needle in the crook of my arm, and push hard, just like I've seen Mr. MacDonald do, sending a triple shot of morphine into my blood. It feels just like happiness. I pick up the gun from where it lies beneath the couch, and I make for the door. Before I leave, I look in the mirror and am confronted by a slovenly fool. My eyes have gone blank, just like his. I am stunned for a moment. It has finally happened. I have become him. Oh, God, help me. I have become him.